It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, joined today by Sigrid Johannes. Sigrid is Senior Director, Government Affairs, National Cattlemen's Beef Association. Hey, so good to see you.
So good to see you, Tony.
Okay, it is a new title, new role for you as well as you make a transition from the public land side, right?
That's right. It was covering public lands issues and wildlife, and now we're on to the wide world of traceability, fake meat, and animal disease. So nothing busy going on there.
Well, I think you said lab meat, so let's just start there. First off, let's identify what it is we're talking about, and then what are you watching?
That's a great point. So this is the cell-cultured meat, lab-grown protein that we're talking about here. A little bit of a different product from plant-based. It's not plants that have been, you know, heavily processed and salted to the nth degree to taste like meat. These are actual animal cells that companies put through a manufacturing process to grow, to cultivate, and ultimately become a blob of tissue that is meant to resemble conventionally raised meat harvested from an animal. You notice I'll say manufactured because these are also a highly processed product. It's not being grown the traditional way, the good old-fashioned way, we would say, but they are actual animal tissues. So something that we've seen pretty interestingly in this space lately is a growing level of concern at the state level wanting to ban these products from the shelves. There are two companies currently approved in the U.S. to produce these types of products, but they haven't been able to scale it up and really make it economical yet, so you're not going to see them in your grocery store shelves quite yet. But you're not going to see them ever now in the states of Florida or Alabama because both of those state legislatures opted to ban these products from the shelves. NCBA obviously has affiliates across the country. We have folks operating in states where the legislature leans right. We have folks in states where the legislature leans left. And ultimately, at the national level, we're not really interested in banning these per se, but we are very interested in making sure that these products are labeled accurately and clearly so that beef can compete on a level playing field, on a fair playing field, with all of the other proteins in the meat case.
Okay, let's talk about, because labeling it makes it clear what that is. I'm stretching now to tie in traceability here, but in a way, they are somewhat loosely related because we're trying to just say this is where an animal has been.
Yeah, I think they are related, Tony, because I think, you know, with traceability and the new rule that we've seen, it's really an update. I think, say, new rule, it's a habit we've gotten into, but it's a little bit erroneous because it's an update to an existing rule, not changing the requirements for what types of cattle have to be carrying a form of official animal ID across state lines, not changing which classes of cattle are exempt from that, but changing the type of tag that needs to be used. So now we've got a final rule out that NCBA and all of our partners at the state level, all of our affiliates have been working with APHIS on this for a long time now. But we've got a finalized rule out that says the new form of official animal ID is going to be EID tags. Now, I think you made an interesting point tying this back to the lab grown or, you know, the consumer side, the beef side. Having full animal traceability all the way through the supply chain definitely does open up some opportunities for some different product claims that we might see on labels in the future. Gives you the ability to verify those processes at more points in the supply chain. But I think the really big factor that we're focused in on when it comes to EID tags and traceability is the ability to respond to a foreign animal disease outbreak. We've got FMD knocking at our door. And I would say knock on wood, all of your listeners knock on wood. But unfortunately, with the amount of global commerce that we do every day, with the amount of people crossing in and out of the United States through means that we can track and through means that we don't track, it's really less a matter of if we're going to have an FMD outbreak and more of a question of when. And when that happens, there's obviously an enormous economic damage to our supply chain due to that mandatory stop movement order when those first cases are detected. So having cattle that are very quickly and efficiently able to be traced via those EID tags, having that data live in a safe and secure and centralized place with APHIS will enable our supply chain to get back to business and back to the speed of commerce a lot faster if that disease hits.
some may wonder, why did the industry pursue traceability? Was that a decision by the industry, or is that more of a reaction in trying to make the best of maybe what USDA said?
Well, you make a good point, Tony. I think no matter what the industry said, USDA told us this is the direction we're going. We are going to update this rule. We are going to change some of the particulars around our traceability requirements. They told us that a couple years ago at this point. And so NCBA got a whole host of folks together from the industry in a working group to talk about what do we want that final rule to look like. I think there were mixed opinions, to be honest, as we often come across in our policy process. You know, when you get folks from all 50 states and all different segments of the supply chain in the same room to talk about an issue, you're going to have some different opinions. That's the beauty of our grassroots process. But, you know, we had some producers who really wanted to be very clear that they wanted this to be a voluntary measure. We had some folks who disagreed with that and said, if we don't make it, you know, across the board, what's the value of having it at all? There were different opinions in that process. Where our national policy came down, though, ultimately, is that we advocated for a nationally significant system. We did not make any specifications about voluntary or otherwise, but we conveyed to APHIS the really important, critical need to not make this another regulatory burden on producers. I think that's really where our focus ended up going, is how can we make this as least burdensome to producers as possible. Data privacy is a massive piece of that. We fought really hard to make sure that any information transmitted from these tags is going to be, you know, not publicly available, not available to folks who don't have the best interests of the industry at heart. And the other piece of that is cost. Obviously, it costs money to put an EID tag in a cow's ear. And so we wanted to make sure that there was going to be federal money available to help offset that cost to cow-calf producers across the country. Those two pieces, data privacy, costs for tags and offsetting that burden on producers, and again, making sure that we can respond to a disease outbreak quickly, efficiently, really, really rapidly so that we can get folks on the road again and get cattle moving again. Those were our key priorities in this, and I think APHIS took a lot of those to heart.
So if that was part of the concern, how does a vaccine bank work its way into that same conversation?
Yeah, the vaccine bank is another key priority that NCBA is working on when it comes to, again, hoping for the best, but we prepare for the worst. And the threat of FMD in particular, but a whole host of foreign animal diseases, is really, really getting quite severe in the United States. We're getting really close to having some kind of an outbreak, you know, that we're going to want to be able to respond to quickly and really try and move as quickly as possible to make sure that that loss of revenue, that loss financially to our producers, is as minimal as it possibly can be, because we know this is going to hurt folks if we get an outbreak on our shores. But the vaccine bank, the National Animal Disease Preparedness Vaccine Bank, is one of our key priorities in the Farm Bill, fully funding that effort, as well as the laboratory network and the tests across the country that help track the spread of disease and the spread of outbreaks, is one of our top Farm Bill priorities. And it's really timely today, Tony, because we're in Washington, D.C., and we have the House Agriculture Committee marking up Chairman Thompson's version of that bill. We are extremely pleased and honestly extremely thankful to Chairman Thompson for including such strong support for the vaccine bank in that bill. We think this is a critical part of making sure that we're able to respond quickly to an outbreak. And if we have to wait, you know, 16 weeks to order a vaccine from other countries, have it produced, have it sent here, you know, go through that entire process, 16 weeks represents a lot of lost money for cattle producers. If they can't move, they can't go anywhere, they're waiting for that stop movement order to be lifted during a potential FMD outbreak. So all of this is geared towards, you know, again, hoping for the best, but planning ahead for a worst case scenario where we need to get folks vaccinated, we need to get animals vaccinated, we need to get them traced, we need to get them back on the road so our producers can keep the supply of beef flowing and also keep making money during a disease outbreak.
So good to see you. If we want to keep up with NCBA online, can we do it?
Absolutely. Strongly encourage folks to visit ncba.org. Go ahead and sign up for our newsletters. We have a lot of good updates for folks every week, and we'll keep you posted as we move forward on these Farm Bill priorities and others.
Sigrid Johannes is Senior Director of Government Affairs National Cattlemen's Beef Association in Washington, D.C. I'm Tony St. James. It's the Agribusiness Report.